The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton and adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
I will be in every episode, and I have been in every episode, and it's just an honor.
Just a true honor.
So, thanks for having me on.
It's really great to have you here today, man. Thanks
you know,
for coming on.
I think I'm going to rebrand this as, like, maybe I'm more like the special guest.
Ooh.
You know, like on late night shows. Like, here with us tonight.
Yeah, here with us tonight.
Except
is...
that I'm so popular, you keep having me back.
Right, yeah. Everybody's like, well, I don't know why you keep bringing on other special guests when you could just have Jonathan Carlin on from the Super Carlin Brothers day in, day out.
Exactly. Which is what we do here on Popcorn Culture.
I have actually heard before that on those late night shows that the amount of star power the celebrity has very little impact on the ratings of the show.
Well, yeah, because I think if you watch the late show with Jimmy Fallon, it's not like, oh, John Krasinski's on, I'm tuning in for that.
Like, that's the one I'm going to. Like, you either watch the show or you don't.
Right, like, you watch the show, you're like a fan of the show, not necessarily, like maybe the star in particular, if you like really leaned in, will draw in some people.
Right.
Or maybe it's like, you really don't want to miss this one because this person's on. But I think if you watch it, you just watch it.
How do you think you would do on one of those shows? Because I think that's, I have wondered so often throughout my life, like, what if the day ever came where I was like the subject of a viral video or something? Mm. Like there was some reason why they would be like, okay, we got to bring you on.
I think we'd do fine.
Yeah?
Yeah, for the most part. Because here, the real thing is that the mark of the really good hosts is that they will save you from anything. Like, they're not trying to embarrass you.
No, of course not. You know? I do think that that is the skill that people don't ever realize that those hosts have. Like, they are masterful at what they are executing without anyone ever realizing it. It's, I think, like with radio DJs, it's like if you think you could do what they're doing, then they're really, really, really good at it.
Right. I also say, I think Ellen DeGeneres, I think it's a lot, I think sometimes more obvious on her show how good she is at this particular act because she'll often have like children on the show.
Yes.
And children are often not very good interviews.
Oh, yeah,
but,
right.
But
yeah, naturally.
Like it doesn't stop her at all.
Right. No, she's able to. Well, because I think a lot of times she plays into that, like, what was the show, like, the things children say? There's
Kids Say the Darndest Things.
Kids Say the Darndest Things. Mm-hmm. I feel like she would be the best if she isn't already just the host of that show.
I want to say that show was recently relaunched, and I don't know who is the present host of it.
Well, it should be Ellen is what it comes down to.
Because, probably.
Because the way that, like, they will answer the questions, she will just repeat it back and then immediately be able to riff on anything they said.
Yeah.
It's so true. I'm like consistently blown away when that is like in effect.
So best case scenario, we get to go on the Ellen DeGeneres show.
That is best case scenario. Yeah, absolutely.
That's the talk show you'd want to go on?
I would say, oh, that's a really good question.
Oh yeah. Which one would you go on?
Maybe. It might. I would say Jimmy Fallon or Ellen DeGeneres would be the top of my list.
Interesting. So like, Ellen's different because she's daytime and the rest are all at night. But of the late night people, I would say I was a fan of Stephen Colbert just before he was a late night person.
Okay.
And I love James Corden too.
Oh, he is also amazing. Yeah. Although I don't know that I could hang with his chops, man. Like his, like, because you have to be, I do think that he brings on guests who are individuals that are entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
And he does a really good job of like getting as much out of them as humanly possible.
Well, because his, like, if you do the carpool karaoke, that is a different beast where, depending on who the artist is, might actually change whether you watch it or not.
That is true.
If you're a fan of the musical guest or...
Well, and there's probably something to be said for how many people... Because I would almost argue that more people watch Carpool Karaoke on YouTube or like a shared video by the page on Facebook or something than are actually watching it like as the show airs.
Oh, YouTube has changed the late night game forever.
Forever, yeah.
Forever. I mean, and for that matter, the late night show's adoption of YouTube has changed YouTube forever. Like, once upon a time, the trending page, I think, was largely YouTube-based creators.
Right.
But once, I feel like anymore, about half of it is late night clips.
Yeah.
You know?
Because they are able to, and that's probably something like structurally, the way that they're like putting together their shows, it's like any individual segment is designed, purposed to be able to be sliced cleanly out.
Yeah.
With no like inside jokes running from like, you know, a segment prior or something like that, where it's just like,
right,
you could just drop right into lip sync battle between Fallon and
it's more like they played
Emma
a YouTube
Stone
video in the middle of their show.
It's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
Man. See, this is the thing, though, is that like we have been interviewed by like Daytime Blue Ridge, which is like the local morning show.
We sure have.
Yeah. And I will tell you what, I feel like despite the fact that like for a living, we go and sit in a chair with bright lights and a camera right in your face, like we do it every day.
Yeah.
I feel like my shoulders hunched in. I felt like I was sweating. I felt nervous. Like my brain was not like firing in a way that was like conducive to the idea of like answering questions in like a clever way.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, I think I get strangely shut down when I'm entering into that like unknown.
Ah.
When of course all they're going to ask you is very softball questions that you 100% know the answer to.
Right, right. Like they're not there to gotcha or anything.
Gotcha you journalism.
Yeah. They're not Joe Galamezzo. I will say I've been on at my old job. I had to frequent the Daytime Blue Ridge, and I don't want to like rain on their parade or anything. They're doing, you know, great work over there at the station. But I will say that the way they often make you sit is not like a really comfortable way. Like they put you on like a stool a lot of the times, which is like encourages that like hunch.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
No good. So like the late night shows, they always have those comfy armchairs. The person can like lean back,
look cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Ben, let me ask you something. Speaking of late night television staples.
Yeah.
Have you ever watched Saturday Night Live? You're familiar with the show.
I'm familiar with the show, Saturday Night Live. It's come up before.
Okay. What do you feel like the musical act at the end is cool?
Like the live performance that they have?
Yeah, they always have like, this week hosted by whoever with musical guest, whatever. You know, whoever it may be.
Right.
Like to me, when I first really discovered SNL was often during summer, like, because it comes on, you know, late night Saturday, obviously.
Right, right.
Given
the
name.
So you're allowed to stay up.
So you're like, yeah, but in the summer between the school years, Comedy Central would just play old episodes of SNL, just like in the middle of the day.
Okay.
And this was like the way I experienced it most of the time.
Right.
Because I don't think I've ever just stayed up and watched SNL live.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I ever have before.
Yeah. Again, thriving on YouTube.
Right.
But I will say, so often, it's like they get to the very end of the show and it's time for the musical guest. And I'm just like, this is just, you could have had two more sketches. Or, I don't know. I've never felt like the musical guest on SNL was very, like, was like a draw on the show to me. I always felt like this is such a waste.
So you feel like maybe there's a chance that it's sort of this ongoing tradition is to have this live performance at the end of a show. And it's almost reached a point where it's kind of like, is this still working?
That's the question. I believe it must have been working. Do you think the musical guest on SNL is still working?
I would be willing to go out on a limb and say no.
I think so.
I think that they're probably at one point in time, it was like part of the challenge associated with doing a show like that is so live driven that it's like, and at the end we're gonna have like a concert, you know,
right.
And it's like, and like we're gonna, you know, it's gonna have dancers and like the whole nine, and you know, everybody's on the spot, and that's part of what like makes it cool. It's Actually, I'm going to toss the TikTok again, as I've so frequently done. There's this challenge that a bunch of people do where they will record themselves saying something and incorporating like a whole bunch of noises into it. And then other people will use the audio and lip sync the entire thing.
Okay.
So like throughout the course of it, you will like go and like pick up a water bottle, take a swig of it, maybe like reach into a bag of chips. So there's like the crinkling bag noise that you're having to match, as well as talking at the same time.
Okay.
So the lip syncs are very impressive. And then almost always, like at the end, you'll get to that point where it'll be like, and would you believe this whole time I've been, and then they stop moving their mouth, and then it'll say like the person who voiced over would say like lip syncing. And so you realize that like this person hasn't been speaking the whole time.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's like, I feel like that's almost the present day version of SNL's musical act. Is it was like throwing a crinkling of chips into a lip sync challenge on a TikTok.
I don't know if I'm following your logic here.
Like it's in the category of things that you have to do live. You are like attempting to do as many, like that is the idea behind the show. You're trying to do as many very difficult to execute live things.
Okay.
Where that's part of like the magic of the whole experience. Mm-hmm. It's like in the middle of a joke, someone can just start laughing at the person.
Right.
And occasionally you do see that happen with SNL. Like you see someone kind of like
break character.
They get like a couple of giggles and then they pull it back together.
Do you know, I think Jimmy Fallon is like famous for this.
Oh, is he really?
For like breaking the like laughing in character a lot.
But does that just like add to like his charm as his like...
Oh, that's the thing. He's too charming.
He's way
too
charming.
Not too charming. I mean, I say that like enviously.
Like he's the exact amount of charming.
Right, that's the thing. He's so charming.
So, okay. So like perfect score on the charm scale is Jimmy Fallon, is what you're saying.
I think he makes very fun interviews.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. Yeah. So, I don't know. I think it's interesting. And it was a way for me to incorporate TikTok into a conversation once again.
Okay, there you go.
Have you downloaded the app yet?
I have the app. I've always had it.
You've always had it. Okay, yeah. Okay.
I've had it for like over a year.
Over a year?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a long time.
Oh, yeah, since last summer.
Man, and you don't ever open it up.
I don't reach for it.
I'm at the point now where I have to like borderline set a timer for myself and be like, okay, Ben, you have 7 minutes. You can watch TikTok for 7 minutes. And then you have to stop because
you have to stop.
You have to stop. You have a problem because they're so engaging.
Why 7 minutes? Well, like if you sat down to watch a television show, you'd sit down for at least 20.
Yeah, but I don't typically do that in the middle of the day. Like that's not a common distraction problem for me. So I would say that for me, that's the real issue is that like if we're like writing on a script or something and I'm like hitting writer's block or I'm just at the point where I'm like, I need to like let my brain check out for a second. Mm. It's this like if I open up the app and just start letting it play and I don't have like a timer set, then it's like, who knows?
Right.
Like who knows? Like I will have to. And that's probably like the ultimate tragedy of a TikTok gone wrong is you were the TikTok that made the person finally close the app.
Oh, wow.
Which like,
you know, TikTok has those numbers.
I know they have those numbers.
You know, that algorithm is tanking that video.
Right. It's like, oh my gosh, this guy was on here for 38 minutes in a row.
And then he got to your video.
He got to your video. And that's when he closed the app. So you do not want to be that person.
I don't want to be that person.
So here's my dilemma with TikTok, though, is I have no idea what type of TikTok persona I would take on.
Oh.
Because so I have exclusively lived in the For You page, which I think is just like, I don't even know if I'm speaking proper TikTok language, but it's like when you open the app, whatever is playing, that's right. Where I'm at. I'm
You're
not
just
like
on the trending page.
I'm just on the trending page. Right. I'm not searching anything.
Okay. You don't subscribe to people.
No, I haven't liked a single video. Which like
very, you know, passive.
Very passive. I haven't even created an account. I'm literally using it as if you went to the YouTube website and did not log in.
That I think is such a phenomenon right now. Not like on your phone or on your desktop or something where almost certainly you're logged in. But if you're the kind of person who experiences a lot of YouTube via like Apple TV.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Like me, a professional YouTuber, am not logged into a YouTube account at home on YouTube. I just like, we open YouTube every single day. And it has learned what kind of videos we like. And even not logged in, it'll just serve us based on our past behavior.
Sure.
But yeah, I always wonder about that, like how stuff like that affects the statistics, like for your own personal channel. Because you can look at subscriber, like people who are subscribed to you, like who view the channel versus people who were not subscribed to you,
right,
who view the channel. And I'm often like, well, like for example, I watch Good Mythical Morning every day.
Yes,
like
from Rhett and Link.
With Rhett and Link. And Like, I'm subscribed to them on probably 4 different YouTube accounts that I own.
Ugh.
But I only ever watch them via Apple TV, where I'm not logged in.
Wow, okay, so you're actually, like, contributing to them thinking 1 less, or potentially 4 less, subscribers are actually watching their channel in lieu of someone who's unsubscribed, as far as their analytics would dictate.
Right,
man,
yes.
You're skewing their numbers so hard.
But that's the thing. Everyone must be.
It is true, and maybe this is a question for the kernels out there, and maybe it depends on how you consume your YouTube. Like, if it is your primary source, then maybe you are logged in. Or I guess you're saying maybe that Apple TV is your primary source.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not logged in.
I'm not logged in at home.
Right.
On my Apple TV. Either of them. So if ever I go on, it's usually to watch Dude Perfect videos. That's just about it.
Yes, I have also been recently tuning into many Dude Perfect videos, because, and let me tell you, I think it's not hard to understand why Dude Perfect is, like, one of the most popular channels ever, but I've discovered, like, a new layer.
Oh, what's
to the
new
greatness, because of course the reason they're so popular is because they're hitting these insane trick shots in this fantastic fashion, and they have cool cinematography and drones, and they're coming up with fun creative things, but they're also super duper family friendly.
Oh,
like, you know, like,
good point.
Like so often, let me tell you something. When you have a child, what your child will request to watch is children's programming, right? So I've been watching a lot of Daniel Tiger.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, are you familiar with Mr. Rogers?
No.
Like, won't you be my neighbor?
Oh, yes, yes.
Right. So Mr. Rogers in the original show had all these puppets, and Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood is an animated show, and it is about the children of all the puppets.
Oh.
But it takes place in the land of make-believe. But so, like, Mr. Rogers had, like, a puppet called Daniel Striped Tiger.
Okay.
Daniel Striped Tiger is now Dad Tiger. His son, Daniel Tiger, is the main protagonist of the show.
Wowzers.
I know. I've been getting deep into the Daniel Tiger lore.
Are
lately.
You? Have you been on the Wiki?
Not deep, but, like, it occurred to me, you're, like, watching the show and you're like, why is one of them a tiger and a cat, and one of them is a human prince, and one of them's an owl? Like, why are these the characters? Like, because I wasn't familiar with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Okay.
So I've gone on and since learned the reasoning behind, like the one of the cat character will finish every sentence with meow 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 meow. It's super annoying, meow meow. But I was like, why are they doing that? And it's like, oh, because that's what they did in the original.
Okay.
They're like, there's all these reckonings back to the original, which make it fun once you know. But I've been, like, trying to, like, decipher the show a little, because I'm like, there must be a lot to this that I'm not getting. And sure enough, there is. And if you're a kid, none of this matters to you. It's just fun animated characters. The real point of the story is that when I'm trying to find stuff that I could have Luke watch that is not really little kid programming, that is also fun for me to watch, but also safe for him to watch. And I've decided that Dude Perfect is an amazing, like, dot in this Venn diagram.
Whoa!
Because it's just sports. It's just sports, and they're just hitting fun trick shots. And, like, Luke loves it. I mean, he will eventually get tired of it, because he gets tired of everything.
Okay.
Fairly quickly. 2-year-olds don't have great attention spans. But I can sit there and at least watch, you know, guys throw crazy basketballs into weird hoops, or professional soccer players do amazing things with balls, or, you know, whatever the case may be. I can do that, and Luke will be interested, because he's like, he likes playing, you know, sport balls.
Sport balls, yeah. So, no, that's really interesting, though, because I think I have like, almost observed through our years, like, growing up, and we were, like, a Nickelodeon family, so we watched all of, like, the Nickelodeon shows.
Which is probably surprising, given what we talk about now.
I know, we were not Disney Channel kids at all.
I know.
Like, people will talk about all these, like, Disney Channel original movies, or, like, Lizzie McGuire, or, like, any of those, like, super popular, like, shows from that time period, and it's, like, all over my head. I don't know any of the references. I don't know any of the characters.
Mm-mm.
So odd. But the thing about, like, growing up, they had Nick Jr. in the mornings that would come on, and it was, like, I felt like even when I was, like, 3-4 years old, it was too young for me.
Yeah.
It's, like, no matter what, it was, like, who is this targeted at? It could be targeted at, no, like, I am the right age, and it feels like it's too kiddy for me.
Ugh.
And the other thing, though, was as soon as, like, it turned into just regular Nickelodeon, those were, like, quote unquote kids shows, but they were not kids shows. Like, some of them were really weird.
Are you talking about, like, Ren and Stimpy and Rocko's Modern Life and stuff?
Yeah, and Cat Dog was a little weird.
Yeah.
You know, like, there was, like, a whole bunch of shows where it was like they were kids shows, because they were cartoons. But then I feel like as time has gone on, things like Family Guy or American Dad or whatever have proved that it is not necessarily true that cartoons are kids' shows, which I almost think has led to the evolution of kids' shows being more appropriate for kids. But then I think on top of that, you see all of these like really, really, really good movies come out that are like Frozen, for example, is like a movie you might take your kids to, but it is an incredibly enjoyable movie as an adult.
Right.
And so I think my question actually for you was going to be, and it sounds like maybe Dude Perfect hits one of these marks, is have kids' shows gotten to that same level of sophistication to where they are appropriate for kids, but also kind of entertaining for you, the adult?
Oh, I have to imagine there is a level of that. I don't know if Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood is quite super enjoyable for adults.
Okay.
I will say, I do feel like it's, maybe it's just hard to remember. I feel like it's more instructive and helpful. I feel like it's, than maybe say like Blue's Clues was.
Okay.
But gosh, I do remember when we were kids. And because we would go to this like babysitter every day,
yeah,
for a while, and it wasn't just like you and me and Ty. It was like, you know, group babysitting.
Yes,
basically, it was like a, you know, one person daycare. Essentially,
there weren't that many kids. It was maybe like five.
But I will say the problem with that is that what you would do was just watch TV.
Yes,
which was real boring. And as a result, because every child there is watching, the level of television anyone's allowed to watch is dictated by the lowest age.
The youngest person
in the room, which, oh, such... Man, you think you were too old for it. I'm older than you.
I've noticed that before. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And maybe this was an effective tactic for teaching kids, but let me ask you if you remember this about Nick Jr., the way they used to program, I know specifically Blue's Clues, is that they would run the same episode 3 times in a row.
Yeah, I do remember this.
Yeah.
It was like you would see, and especially in the beginning when Blue's Clues came out, it was like they launched it to play all the time with like 12 episodes. And so it was like, I feel like the first year it was out, it was like, yeah, we know where the cat is. We've seen the cat.
Oh my gosh. You'd have to like suffer through this whole episode and then the exact same episode would play. And I guess the idea is that if you're like a very young child, you get like, oh, now you know all the gimmicks. And by the third time, you're like, I get it. I learned something. But oh man, if you are one day over the appropriate age for this, the whole show is so unbelievably obvious and stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. I'm sure Blue's Clues is a much beloved show.
Oh, it is. Yeah. I mean, and I think that there probably is an appropriate age range, but it's like, I think you're hitting a mark that kids come and leave rather quickly.
Yeah.
And so at any given point in time, there are kids who are the appropriate age for it, but not for long.
Yeah.
And so I think you immediately step into the next phase. So what is the show? There's a show that people have always requested us talk about that I feel like might be the answer to this question, where apparently there's deep, deep lore and tons of details. I feel like you've watched it. It's a Disney show.
Oh. I do Gravity Falls.
Gravity Falls.
Yeah.
Do people have weird noses in Gravity Falls?
There are some.
Okay. What is the deal with weird noses? Is that a particularly difficult thing for people to like animate? And so they do like these kind of odd. Is it the Book of Life?
It's like life.
It's like the other Coco movie.
Yeah.
Which is actually quite good. But it's another one of those where the same noses are being used.
Yeah, I don't know. It must be a particular sort of animation style. I think it's interesting what you were saying about how, yeah, a lot of like cartoons were kind of like a little bit creepy.
Yeah.
Or not quite maybe kid-friendly as much, but you watched it like they were cartoons though, so by definition they were for kids.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like, man, that must be my reasoning behind that, I think, is that you probably have all these artists who are really good at drawing and who want a career in animation, and they don't necessarily want to make children's programming because they're adults who have stories to tell or whatever.
Sure.
But this is the only market for animation, and so they're stuck trying to like cheat the rules as much as possible.
So like just like progressively like make it slightly edgier.
Right.
There were episodes of SpongeBob SquarePants that I felt like always did this, where it was like SpongeBob is, I think, a pretty tame show, mm-hmm. Under most circumstances. But there would almost always be this one moment where they would do this like very detailed drawing. Oh,
like hyper realistic, like gross drawing.
Yes. Yeah, it would be like, I've got this thing growing on my knee, SpongeBob. And then it would like zoom in on it. And it's this like disgusting, like. Whatever on Patrick's like arm or knee or
that is 100% the animators flexing.
Yeah. It's like, all right, let's do that. Why don't we? It's right. Like that's the gag they did that episode that they were all so proud of.
Right. They're like, I went to art school for 6 years and now I'm drawing a square with eyes. You know? Like, look, can I please draw one thing that isn't a cube?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, you could draw a star.
Yeah. Yeah, that is 100%.
It's an advanced cube.
Right. But I think that kind of stuff is sort of what made SpongeBob really popular early on, is that they let them take creative liberties, but they, for the most part, they stayed inside the lines of being like, okay, be creative, do fun art stuff, but don't get creepy. Don't go like across the line.
Don't step into like Ren and Stimpy's territory.
Right.
Yeah, that show was weird.
I agree. I know people who like remember it so fondly, like, oh, I loved it. It was the best. And I'm like, I think even growing up, I'd be like, okay, maybe when I was a kid, I just didn't get it. But I'm older. They're playing reruns. I'll get it now. I never understood.
I never
got it. Never thought it was funny. Still don't get it.
I have had this weird problem with animation, and I don't know that it's like if I've been like scarred from things from when I was a kid, but like for a long time as a kid, like the thing that was under my bed, you know, that I was afraid of was Beavis and Butthead. And it was like,
I completely forgot about that show.
I know, right? Yeah, it's like a really weird kind of style of animation. Like that really creeped me out. And then like we said, all these others like Ren and Stimpy, Rocko's Modern Life had these neighbors called like the Fatheads, and they super creeped me out.
Mm.
Like I really didn't like whenever they would cut to these like triangular shaped pickle looking people.
I'm pretty sure it was what they were.
Whatever they were. But they were like really, really odd. And then I think this is actually carried for me all the way to like South Park, which is something where like I feel like I would really like South Park, except every once in a while they do the same thing where I'm like, oh man, I really don't want to go near that at all. And I don't know why, like these like cartoon images, they get like ingrained into my mind and like scare me.
Interesting.
It is actually like, I think, some kind of a fear. And I don't know if it's like playing off of something that is so reassuring as a cartoon, and then like almost putting a really, really, really like horror based film on top of it. Kind of like why like a doll is all of a sudden like really creepy in horror movies, because you've got this thing that like is generally given to like children as a toy.
Right.
But when you see like a doll staring at you at night from across the room, it's like, what is up with that?
Right. It's like what makes clowns scary.
Like there's something who are meant to be funny.
Right.
But then like when
you twist it.
Right. It stops being funny. And it's like the departure from where it's supposed to exist to where it becomes is so great. That like the juxtaposition of the ideas in your mind is what is the jarring effect behind it.
I see.
But that being said, like things like Beavis and Butthead are not, it's not, it's intended, I think, to be a funny show. It's not meant to be like a horror show or in any way scary, but it scared me to death.
Right. Yeah. There was like a real grittiness to the way they were drawn.
Yeah.
And stuff. It seemed like intentionally messy. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't get it. I never watched it.
Yeah.
I would agree. It was just seemed like it feels inappropriate for the sake of inappropriateness.
Yeah. The moment that I can go back to was I feel like there was like one day where we had a babysitter who was watching it, and it was kind of this like, everybody needs to stay in the living room while we watch TV. And it was like, I was like trapped inside of this room.
No.
And I remember like literally for the entire time it was on, I remember hiding underneath my blanket and
purple blanket.
No, not, I don't know if we had purple blanket yet. This was my rainbow blanket.
Wait, what was rainbow blanket?
This was like my blankie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, growing up, like It was like my childhood blanket. Okay. Do you not remember this?
I don't think so.
Oh, weird. Tyler, our little brother, also had like a white blanket.
That I remember that one.
It like disintegrated.
It was basically just, like dragging around
rags.
Shredded rags.
Literally. Yeah, I cannot believe how long that thing lasted. But so anyway, I had one as well that was like a small version of purple blanket, but it was more like a, it wasn't like full blown rainbow, like defined colors. It was more just like gentle shades of pastels that went from one to the other.
Right.
Yeah.
You had a lot of manly blankets as a kid.
I was not a very masculine child at all. Quite frankly, I remember we used to go to the, I'm going to circle back to Beavis and Butthead. We used to go to the dollar store, and I don't know if this was like me trying to be different or like choose something that would be unexpected, but they had like these mystery bags you could buy for a dollar that were full of like maybe a tube of bubbles or like a sticker sheet or something. But they would have like a boy's bag and a girl's bag, and I would always pick the girl's bag.
Interesting.
And I feel like it was because like as a kid, I was like, I have no idea why. I think part of me thought there was a greater likelihood of there being treasure inside of the girl's bag.
Like there would be jewels or something.
Jewels, like something like potentially sparkly.
Of course. Know how bad love treasure.
Dude,
who doesn't
love treasure? To this day, if somebody approached me and they were like, I will pay you a small amount of money that is still livable to go and be a treasure hunter in the ocean, like where we like scuba dive and like look for treasure, like doubloons and stuff, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Wow.
That's like the dream. That is my dream job.
Do you want to know that a TV show that maybe your child would like, but that might also drive you a little crazy, is called Jake and the Neverland Pirates?
Is there treasure?
Oh, there's treasure in every episode, Ben.
I love it already.
Well, here's the thing.
Oh, no. Don't take it away from me.
So it takes place in like Neverland, where like Peter Pan lives.
Okay.
And they're always like, you know, against Captain Hook or whatever.
Sure.
And there's, you know, three little children pirates which right out of the gate, I'm like, is it good to be promoting pirate? Like the main characters are also pirates, but they're like good pirates. And you're like, I don't know if there are good pirates, but.
Oh, sure. Like pirates have been maybe glamorized a little bit.
A little bit.
Thanks to like Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, way before that. But yeah. Right. Not the point. The point. This is early. The first few times I watched Jake and the Neverland Pirates. Every time they like complete a challenge, like they get across a puzzle, you know, where they've turn to the camera and like, how do we get across Alligator Alley? And they're like, what if we jump here? And you know, whatever.
And then they pause and it's like, okay,
yeah. They're like, count to three, then we'll jump through the mouth. One, two, three, you know, whatever.
Right.
Whatever the case may be. There's a bazillion little Alligator Alley, Bumblebee Beach, you know, whatever it is.
Okay, okay.
Anytime they complete a challenge, out of nowhere, as a reward from Neverland itself, gold doubloons will appear. And they'll be like, great, we finished the challenge. And we earned three gold doubloons. And they'll just grab it out of the air. They'll just pop up out of nowhere. And the problem was, like, the first several times we watched the show, we get about 5 minutes in, and I'd see them collect, you know, six or seven doubloons or whatever. And I never see, but Luke would always get bored before the end of the episode. And so it was like this thing, and I was like, what did they use the gold for? Like, certainly at the end,
they get to
purchase something.
A concession stand.
Or maybe, do we get to like go to their vault and they're like slowly filling it up? Is there like a trophy room or something? Yeah, do they get to like buy something cool at the end? And finally, I see the end of an episode of Jake and the Neverland Pirates. And all that happens is that it's just a counting game at the end, is that they have a treasure chest that pops up from the sand. And they'll say, let's count the number we got. And it'll be like, one, two, three, four. And then it'll just pile in there. But it's
Wait. What comes after four?
Five. But it's like the chest is already full. It's not like every episode it gets a little fuller.
Oh.
Like they fall on top. It was the most disappointing thing.
Just dreadful continuity.
Just dreadful continuity. And that the doubloons were not like, it wasn't like, oh wow, this is a great episode. They got like 15. They're going to get to buy something really cool.
But, right, yeah.
Like, oh, I'm so disappointed in Jake and the Neverland Pirates and their poor use of treasure.
Man.
Yeah.
It's like such a lesson to be taught in how like galleons work.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. There could have been so much more fun.
There could have been.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all are likely aware of the fact that we have our very own Shopify store, Carlin Brothers Mercantile. And it's hard to imagine not having it now, but arriving at the decision to open our own web store was a big one. In fact, we started our journey on the interweb back in 2012 and didn't finally open up shop until 2018. And a huge part of that is just not knowing where to start, but that's where Shopify steps in. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, which is a fancy way of saying it's a really easy and effective way to start an online business, no matter if you're operating out of your garage or have like a whole building or three or something. Once we were set up, our biggest concern was trying a new product, only to discover no one was interested in it. But Shopify is powered with so many reports, more than you can even imagine. And this is so handy because it allows us to use data to better provide what folks are actually interested in. It's so easy to use, but even if you do find yourself caught in a jam, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/poppop.
Popcorn culture is supported by Arena Club.
Okay, so you guys know that I love trading card games and that me and Ben are big time collectors of Pokemon cards. You know, it's that childhood fantasy of finally being able to use adult money to buy those highly coveted rares of our youth. And like, even in our office, we have not one, but two full display cases with some of our all time favorite rarest cards that we've pulled. But something I did not know existed when I was a kid in my youth was the grading process for trading cards or sports cards or whatever you're collecting. You know, to me it was just like a rare Charizard is a rare Charizard. Like, it doesn't matter if it's been hanging out in my pocket with my lucky paper clip. Turns out it does matter, and kind of a lot, because if you get your cards professionally graded, it can add huge value. And then not only that, but once they're graded, they will like seal them in that pristine condition inside of a plastic case, or what's known in the industry as a slab. And that's where Arena Club steps in, because it's like buying a booster pack, but it's for a pre-graded card. Now, I know that can take like maybe a second to wrap your head around, because you're opening physical cards on a digital platform, which means you open the pack online and see your pulls where they can be added to your showroom for the world to see. But you can also request them to be sent to you at any time. So they have got a ton of pre-graded cards, and then you will get to randomly open one, and then they'll keep it for you, or they can send it to you, or you can just like sell it or trade it online or whatever you want to do. But whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have got to check out. And right now you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/poppop, which, wow, that is a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's like $40 right there. Anyway, that's arenaclub.com/poppop for 10% off your first purchase.
No, that's interesting. So what you're telling me is that we should write a kid show.
Dude, we probably could.
With good continuity.
Yeah, with good continuity.
Okay. So I like this idea. So we pitch a kid's show that is fun for adults at the same time, because there's like an underlying, like, really interesting story going on. Mm-hmm. But then also like teaches you how to count, like, what colors are and shapes and stuff like that.
Yeah. Ooh, you know what? On this end, I'm going to circle back to Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood.
Okay.
Because I've been watching it a lot.
Yeah.
Particularly the one where it's Daniel's birthday and he goes to build a tiger cake.
Does Luke like this one?
Luke loves this one. It is the very first episode. It is, all that happens is they go to the bakery and he picks out a tiger cake and he gets to decorate it, but then he makes like a smudge on the mouth.
Okay.
And they're like, oh, when something goes wrong, turn it around and make something good. It was like, oh, I'll turn the smudge into a smile, kind of thing.
Okay.
I will say this, that maybe it's not super entertaining for adults, but I will say there are, I think, good takeaways for adults, because repeatedly, over and over in every episode, the children will run into the most basic of mundane problems, like, oh, the cardboard wing fell off my rocket ship. I can't play anymore now.
No!
Right. And the answer is, I must always just pretend. But
where's that bonding strip? That's a Buzz Lightyear reference.
But the solution, anytime they run into any problem at all, is the parent of the episode of whatever house they're at will come in and be like, why don't you try this? And I think they actually have very like light like parenting tips for like, if your child is in this situation, here's something you might try.
Oh, interesting.
You know, it's trying to tell the kids, here's what you should do. But like, really? Also, I think not terrible things for parents.
So just good parenting advice.
Just basically. Now, sometimes it's sort of like, yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. But whatever. But,
interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So have you, has there been a moment that you can go back to where like you walked in and you corrected a problem based on what you had learned from
Native Tiger?
I almost called it Tiger King. It's the same, right?
It could not be more different.
Okay.
There is not in particular, but Luke is also maybe not quite where he could like comprehend exactly.
Okay.
What I might be going for.
But someday it'll happen.
Someday I'd be like, I feel like I could be like, oh, remember when this happened? What do we do?
Let's solve it together.
Let's sing a little jingle.
Right.
Yeah. They do sing lots of little jingles that are very catchy.
Oh no.
Oh, it's the worst.
Actually, going back to SpongeBob SquarePants, there is one episode where they're like performing for the Super Bowl.
Oh.
And they play this song that is like forever. I always just thought that they like had just gotten the rights to a song.
Right.
And they were just like, I was like, oh, like it's so cool. They got that like Sweet Victory song.
Yeah. Sweet Victory.
But they didn't.
Yeah.
They just wrote like a one hit wonder inside of an episode of SpongeBob.
I had the exact same experience. I was like, man, this is, yeah, I love this. I can't believe they did this for the show. And it'd always be like, it reminds you so much of one of those like, we are the champions.
Yeah.
Kind of like feelings. And you'd be like, I think it would always come on in SpongeBob and I would know it from that. And then you'd be at like a stadium or something. You'd be like, and you'd hear like adjacent sounding stuff and you'd be like, no one ever plays this.
Right.
Like, I can't, like, I know it. It must be something they play at like actual sports games because it's on SpongeBob. But it's like, oh no, it's just a SpongeBob thing.
It's just a SpongeBob thing. Yeah. And it's, we'll have to like link it in the show notes for this episode in case you haven't seen it. But it's just like SpongeBob rallies the troops to become a marching band to play at the Bubble Dome or something.
Yeah.
And like they get out there and just totally break it down. Like it gives me like chills sometimes. Like I could like work out to this song in a SpongeBob episode.
Oh man.
Which is not saying much actually, because I get weirdly pumped by Disney music, like in general. Mm-hmm. So like there are all these moments where in my life where I'll like be like rolling around like, and I drive like a pretty big truck.
Yeah.
Or I will be like weightlifting or something, like these occasions that I do not think that most people would expect that what I'm listening to is like the Frozen soundtrack or the song Speechless from the Aladdin live action movie, yeah. Which is so good, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Don't you feel like such an empowered woman when you listen to that song?
Yes. Yes, indeed. It's like the best feeling. I'm always like, actually, there's this one moment at the end of that song where there's this like bass hit that if you're in like your car or something, it like goes around the car.
Oh,
like,
does
it?
It's
very well like edited to where it like, yeah, it goes from like front left speaker, front right speaker, back right speaker, left back speaker. I don't know if I got all those right, but you get the idea.
Yeah,
you know how a circular square works.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, but it's so cool. It's like my favorite part. I was like, crank it up right for that moment. It's like, boom.
Nice.
Hopefully everybody got that full effect at home.
Yeah. Ethan edited that.
Yeah.
Circular square.
Right, in a circular square.
Yeah, that's how it is.
Yeah. Do you ever get pumped up by music though? Is that a thing for you? Like, can you get like stoked? Because yeah. I would say that like we grew up and I feel like our dad was at one point in time he was like a radio DJ and
yeah.
I think he did like his college radio station. Mm-hmm. So like at our house as kids we had this like huge drawer like full of like so many CDs.
Oh yes, our I know our dad had a really big CD collection.
Yes.
Yeah.
But growing up, I don't know that at any point in time we were like instructed or taught or like came to appreciate music at any point in time. And maybe it's something that just happens naturally. Like maybe like yeah. most kids like find their own music and they just sort of like embrace it and like the, you know, parents buy them like CDs or something.
I felt like this was like a missing yeah from me for like my whole life.
Yeah.
A little bit. Because, yeah, I was never, like, defined by the music I liked.
Right.
Or anything like that. Like, and, like, I guess what's weird is that I never experienced it as though I was missing something. But, like, when I look back, like, when you, like, watch any movie or talk to anyone, I'm like, oh, yeah, like, I loved this as a kid and I was so into this music. And it was just like, I don't have that experience anywhere where I was like, this music speaks to me as a adolescent, or I'm really like taking away meaning from these songs, or I'm really into this genre, even like into this genre of music. I was never like, oh, I just love rock music. Just,
oh yeah,
can't
yeah,
listen to enough, or oh, I mean, top 40 all day, every day, you know, whatever. It was just,
well, that's the thing. Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, and I think that like a lot of people be like, oh, like, you know, that like this was their best album. And I'm like, I know that one song. Like,
right.
I don't even know that I've ever successfully listened to like an entire album to this day, like that wasn't just a collection of songs from a Disney movie, like the Moana soundtrack.
Oh, can I tell you, this is a funny story. In college, every now and then, one of my buddies and I would go to a cosmic bowling night at the...
You guys.
Oh, yeah.
We're so cool.
You know it. That's right.
I can't talk. I own bowling shoes.
You
so.
Own, yeah, you own a bowling ball.
No, I don't own a bowling ball. You know, just bowling shoes.
My friend had bowling shoes and a ball and rented a locker.
Okay.
But I would just go with him so that he would have someone to bowl with.
Did he have the towel that you would like put the ball in and like sort of do like this weird like shimmy back and forth?
Oh gosh, I don't think so. I don't think I remember him doing that. Okay. Anyway, anyone who's ever been to cosmic bowling knows that the real fun part is that every now and then the pins will reset and there will be an orange pin or a multicolored pin at the front.
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like the pin is just in play. It's back there in the randomizer on every reset.
Is that what they call a pin resetter, a randomizer?
Well, I really wish they do.
They did as well.
Yeah.
It's like, I gotta go, can I get some new parts for the randomizer?
That sounds so fun.
It does.
It's like worth owning a bowling alley.
Just, okay, let's do it.
Well,
whenever you get excited about an idea that I could be excited about in reverse, it's like the best moment of my life every single time.
Oh, okay.
It's like, oh, let's own a bowling alley? Yes.
Okay.
We would have the best bowling alley.
Yeah. I'm leaning more toward, yeah, we could have a bowling alley at like our barcade.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm on board. I'm on board. Anyway, carry on with cosmic bowling.
Cosmic bowling. The best moment. So when you're a kid, you go to cosmic bowling, like your parents have to bring you, or it has to be like a party or something, and everyone's taking turns, and not only do you have to be lucky enough to be the person that the front pin is the special pin for.
So it has to be the front pin.
It has to be the front pin.
Okay.
This is anywhere I've been, the way cosmic bowling works is if the front pin is like the special pin, like the orange pin or whatever, and you get a strike, you like win a prize.
What kind of prize?
I know. Exactly.
Nachos?
So we're there at cosmic bowling and we each have like our own lane. You know, it's not like a super popular thing, it turns out. on a college campus on Saturday night.
I would say a bowling alley on a college campus is like the rock wall at a college campus,
yeah,
where it's like this thing that they include in all of the marketing for like the cool, fun things you can do if you go to this college. It's like, we have a bowling alley, a rock wall.
Right.
No one uses either.
Yeah, those are certainly things to put in the brochure. I would say that I think most people maybe do those activities like once.
One time. Yeah,
they do it like once. And it was like, yeah, oh yeah, remember the time we went bowling? That was great.
That was so fun.
Yeah, that was good. Anyway, we're there. We each have our own lane. I must have probably bowled like 200 frames that night. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You can just let them fly.
Right.
So, and you, if the front pin's not there, who cares? It's a wash. You just want them to reset. You try to get that front pin up as many times as possible.
Okay.
So you can get the strike. I finally get it. Like, it was so annoying because I was throwing many strikes on this evening, but I would lose my nerve when I had the chance. But I finally got it. And what? And of course, the prizes are just terrible.
Are they?
Oh, yeah.
Especially, I was hoping they were going to be really good.
Maybe at like a real bowling alley they are, but at the, you know, the student center at Tech.
Low budget. Okay.
Low budget.
I'm imagining now like one of those like kind of plastic frogs that you can like press like its butt and it like sort of like
higher
jumps.
Budget than that, but not much.
Okay.
You're familiar with like, say, I don't know, a Hot Wheels car?
I've heard of them.
Yeah. That might have been a prize.
But not a treasure hunt.
No, though. Actually, I think I ended up with two prizes on the night.
Okay.
One of them was a Lightning McQueen diecast car.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you
right.
still have it to this day?
I don't think I do.
Oh, that was.
But
would
it was fun. It was after he like driven through the cactuses, so he had like cactuses stuck to him.
Okay.
Yeah, and it, not important. The important part is the other prize, which I cannot stress to you enough how slight the selection was. But where I landed on picking a Johnny Cash CD.
Okay.
I know. Like, all right. So anyway, this was my prize. I won this Johnny Cash CD.
Some people would be delighted at that.
Some people would, I'm sure. I'm sure they would. But, you know, I was never, you know, just, you know.
Not a Cash fan?
I'm not a Cash fan. Okay. Which is not like, it's not like if you listen to modern country radio, they're not playing lots of Johnny Cash songs or anything.
Okay. But did you become more a Johnny Cash fan after winning this CD?
That is where I'm going with the story.
Okay.
Is that I had, you know, I had back, my college car was this BMW, and you change the CDs in the trunk. For
naturally,
some reason.
Oh, that's what, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it, you could put six whole CDs in there.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So, like, you didn't have to be too dedicated to whatever it was. You could have, you know, you could switch around a bunch. So I put in the Johnny Cash CD. And let me tell you what, man. This was certainly a CD that I eventually knew the words to every song
on this
album. And I listened to it, like, all the time. I don't think I even have it anymore. But that was that's my story of getting a CD and just listening to it all the way through. And,
wow.
Yeah.
So, like, this bowling alley, in a small way, effectively changed your life.
I don't know about, I mean,
the entire trajectory.
Imagine.
Like, if you hadn't learned all those lessons from Johnny Cash, like, for example,
that Ring of Fire.
The Ring of Fire! Yeah. Of course. That.
The Ring of Fire!
The Ring of Fire!
That was a Finding Nemo joke.
Yeah. Okay.
It was the album that had that song on it, which is, of course, like, I think, like, his most famous song.
Pretty iconic. Okay.
And it's interesting. So, I don't know. That was a different experience. Other than that, I know I used to have, like, a bunch of, I guess I had a lot of Jimmy Buffett music.
You have gone up to Jimmy Buffett concerts.
I have.
Before.
If I have a favorite musical artist, it was probably Jimmy Buffett.
Okay.
But I don't even, like, actively listen.
Sure. It's a certain kind of mood to be listening to Jimmy Buffett.
I think in particular, you have there's Zac Brown Band, Kenny Chesney, and Jimmy Buffett. I think maybe the only three artists who fit super effectively into the same category together of just this like
beach
happy
country,
beach country music.
Yep.
Yeah. I like that. You know what? That's probably my favorite kind of music.
Beach country
is like
which
beach
has
country.
A total of three artists
exactly
that fit neatly into the category.
That's right. But again, I really don't ever listen to it.
Yeah.
Getting in my car, firing up anything. I think on my iPhone, I bet you I don't even have a Jimmy Buffett song on it.
I think I have one and it's in French.
It's in French. Oh, I know.
A chanson pour les petits enfants.
Yeah, a song for the children.
There you go. But this is like one of those things. I was actually talking about it. It was Memorial Day weekend this past weekend. And so I was just down at the lake with just myself, Alice, her sister, and her sister's boyfriend, who is one of the GMA members, Mike. And we were having this discussion about like what our first CDs were.
Mm.
And this is one of those things where I feel like I now they don't feel as bad because I feel like they've become so popular again. But I think my first two CDs were literally the first Backstreet Boys CD was the first one.
Yeah.
And the second one was the first NSYNC CD. So literally it's like in third grade, those were my jams.
There's Ben sitting in his rainbow blanket playing with his girl's bag.
From the dollar store.
Listening to the Backstreet Boys.
I know. Yeah, there was, it was a cool moment. But then on top of that, I think my third CD for Christmas, mom and dad got me one of these like Walkman CD players that like wouldn't skip. It had like the, I forget what it was.
Like Shock.
Yeah, like the Shock Zorb or something like that. So you could
I know exactly what you're talking
about. You could like flip it upside down.
If
and
you wanted to burn
skip.
That battery real quick, you turn on the... the shock.
Yeah, the shock absorber.
The no-skip functionality.
So they gave me that and the A-Teens CD.
Oh, which was like a 90s ABBA cover band, if I recall.
Yes, that's exactly correct. Hmm. So it was like, I don't know. I feel like I talked to everybody else since like, Green Day was my first one or something. I can't think of a single other thing. Third Eye Blind.
Mm-hmm.
What were other Three Doors Down. All big artists. Blink 182. I think our little brother's first CD was a Blink 182 CD.
Mm. Do you know what my first CD was?
Hold on. I might know.
Okay.
Do I know? Hold on. How old would you have been when you got your first CD?
I want to say it was not age appropriate.
Okay, what was it?
Okay, it was 311.
Yeah!
Right?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yes.
Because, okay, this is the thing though. This is going back. Like, you had a friend who had a, like, one of those CD binders, like, with a zipper.
Oh, yes.
And I think he had 200 CDs in it.
Dude, this was like a friend who I don't think, who was like an anomaly within children about his interest in music at such an early age.
Right.
Where, like, it was obviously important to him to know about music like early on.
Right.
And Like, it, you know, a new CD came out, he was all over it. It was like, it's not even on my radar.
Right.
Like, even after he told me, I was like, I don't care.
I am uninterested in this
But
thing.
He would, like, introduce me. It's probably a good thing I knew him, because he would introduce me to a lot of otherwise, like, songs that I would otherwise have just completely missed out on.
Right.
But yes, I had a friend. And so I think early on, I think it's like a third grader or something, like 311 was his jam. And he was like, oh yeah. And like, you know, he got, you know, all of us kids into it.
Oh, you guys. So
all,
it was like a really strange amount of 311 fans at Liam Wade Elementary.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's right. So I think one year for my birthday, you know, mom and dad got me a big like boombox stereo thing, and they obviously had to get me a CD to go with it. And that's what I got.
That's what you got.
That's what I got, which seems like when I look back, I'm like, that was interesting. I think I had like, it was like all this alternative rock kind of thing. I think that was mostly what my friend was into, like rock, alternative rock. So I think I had like a Korn CD as like a fourth grader. It's like, I was like,
I think you did. I feel like these things are coming back to me a little bit now, because I do feel like there was, it seems so weird to think about it now, but I do feel like there was a period of time where I was like, man, Jay's edgy. Like he's cool, you know, he likes the like off the beaten path stuff.
Even saying something that like, oh, you listen to that kind of music, that makes you cool, like that sounds ridiculous to me, like because you listen to certain
music.
What do you mean? Anyone can listen to any music they want.
This is such a weird thing though, is that like I feel like it's so much more common than it would be for like artwork or other just art in general. Is your taste in music is more likely to be like relevant to any given conversation than your taste in artwork might be.
Mm.
Like, or, I don't know. Like, music is this thing that's like, it's so...
It feels very personal.
It does. But like, it's such a personal thing that your taste in music, not even your ability to produce music.
Yeah, your taste in music.
Right, which is such an odd thing. Like, like what you like that other people do is so representative of you.
Right.
How odd is that?
Some people wear that as like such a badge too.
Right.
You know, like, oh, our friend Mike, who you just mentioned.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you do. Like, Mike, I'm sorry. I love you, man. But you don't want to be at a party where Mike is taking control of the... of the music.
Of the stereo.
He is that guy at the party who like wants to like the music is really important to him. Like he's like very concerned that the music needs to be a certain way.
Yes.
He's like, just put it on top 40, let it roll, dude. Everyone's gonna have fun. He's like, that's not, you know, it's like that's gonna be embarrassing to him that he was at a party playing that kind of music or something.
Well, so that was the thing. Okay, so I think he really enjoyed, and this was almost my relationship with it, where so much of the music that I came to like in high school was introduced to me by Mike. Me and him would go like driving around in our car, and I would just like sort of like listen to these songs sort of in the background on repeat.
Right.
And so like I would start to get to know them, so that when they were like blasting, I was like, yeah, this song's awesome. And
right.
I think that was like being able to share that with people was something he loved so much, that when we would go to a party, he would like pop in a CD for like one of these obscure artists, being like, man, I'm gonna have to like convince all these people to like this new obscure artist.
Right.
But it's like, it's so hard the first time you hear some of this music to immediately be like, yeah,
right,
this
well,
is good.
Right. Because like the point of going to the party isn't to like listen to new music. It's to have fun listening to music you already know.
Right.
Or that's not even maybe the point. Like the music is just supposed to be like a amplifying effect, and it's something that can bring everyone together because you all already know it.
Yes.
When you have a brand new alternative indie rock group coming through that no one's ever heard of, less fun.
Less fun, less fun. But this was the thing with me in college. So I never, like, going all the way up, and I would say through my entire college career, understood how, like, to go about selecting either, like, hip-hop, top hits, or, like, rap music especially.
Yeah.
And so I would like throw these parties for like six people or something. You know, they were usually not very highly attended occasions.
Mm.
Not really like as a failure of the party, like a whole bunch of people didn't show up. I just usually only invited like the people I would just hang out with anyway,
right,
and called it a party.
Yeah.
And so I would go through and I would try to like put these party playlists together. And all they would end up being is like my interpretation of what I was hearing at other parties, which was rap music effectively. And I found the worst songs that were like horrifically inappropriate. But as much as I did not understand music, I have always loved speakers. Like, yeah. Like my,
you
like,
have.
Yeah. Like since I was a little kid in like my first car, like I installed like this like insane stereo and subwoofers and it was like this whole thing. And so the same was true once I got to college. I remember saving up all summer and like the one thing I wanted to buy before I went back to college was like a really good home stereo system that like I would like mount to the walls and like run wires and like yeah. the whole nine yards. It was like way too loud, way too much volume for like a 700 square foot apartment. And so people would show up and I would have like a 13 song party playlist of incredibly vulgar rap music that I didn't even like that I would put on repeat that would go on to play for the rest of the night at like volumes where you are screaming at one another. Nobody is dancing at all.
Right.
Like, but I think it was this thing where maybe I was putting way too much priority on the music thinking like that was what was delivering a really solid party to my guests was.
Interesting.
It was just like this thing that I didn't fully understand in a way that is like, it's so hard to look back on it. And I'm sure if I went back in time and I was able to get in the driver's seat of myself then, like people never complained about it or anything. So it couldn't have been as bad as I'm remembering it.
Yeah.
Unless maybe people were just really nice.
This sounds like the sort of thing that you remember being embarrassed by. And so it like stands out as like really obvious to you, but to everyone else, it was probably just like, yeah, it was just, you know, it was just background music.
Maybe they thought I was really good at picking music.
Like, maybe they did.
I haven't heard a lot of this stuff before. They sure do swear a lot.
Okay, let me ask you about a different situation, which is if you are, this would stress me out so much, but if you are riding in the car with somebody and you're in the passenger seat and they like are like, oh, you can control the music, pick, like, just play whatever you want, like that to me mortifying.
Well, like don't ask me,
right? Because it's like you have suddenly been assigned the task of choosing what do you think our shared interest in music is.
This is it's actually an incredibly dicey game to play.
It is,
because yeah, this is one of those things. I would say even going one step further than that, I would not want to shuffle my music with other people around.
Oh, no.
Because it would be like the people say, like, I'm into everything. I like everything. It's like, step aside, please. There is nothing more erratic than my iPod shuffle.
Ben, we should, okay, I would challenge you that the music on there is so all over the place. Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're both going to pull out our phone right now and open the music app.
Hold on. You have to silence your phone so that we don't accidentally play copywritten music.
Okay. Just go to songs, and at the top, it's going to say shuffle.
Yep.
Let's maybe like shuffle through, I don't know, five songs each?
Okay,
you go first.
Okay, let's see. Make sure my volume's down.
Oh my gosh. I'm so nervous now.
Okay, song number one is Flower by Moby.
Flower by Moby. Don't know it.
I think this is like the song that we use to do like a squat challenge, because it's like
Oh, I see.
So it's like up, down, up, down. So you can do it with like push-ups or air squats or something, which I do challenge you to do. Download the song Flower by Moby, or maybe Moby by Flower. I don't know which way it goes.
I'm sure Moby is the artist.
Okay. Look at me. And try to do air squats to it, because it's actually a lot of fun.
Every time they say down, you go down. Every time they say up, you go up.
Yes. That's a challenge extended.
That's how it goes. Okay. I will warn you, and I'm going to, that I made the mistake of purchasing the Moana soundtrack, which includes, of course, all the songs in the movie, but also 30 more instrumental tracks.
Yes.
All of which are on my phone.
Okay.
I'm going to skip past those if I land on
that's
them.
That's fine.
Unless it's actually from the song. So let's see. Okay. First song is We Know the Way from Moana. Wouldn't you know?
Wouldn't you know?
Wouldn't you know?
Okay. So okay. One Disney hit so far.
Yep. There you go.
Okay. Next up for me is going to be also from a Disney. It's Belle from the live action Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, I've got some of those on here.
Yep.
You know it. Okay. This is, I'm so nervous. Let's get it. Oh God, this could not be a worse thing to
follow. Oh my gosh. That's really funny.
This is the only song I have ever released myself. Not myself. This is the Pixar Theory song that just came up next on mine. Edited together for us by the Gregory Brothers, which is just like a super auto-tuned version of my voice. Available on iTunes if you want to purchase.
It is very good. I was wondering whether or not that would come up.
Oh,
I bet that's your recent purchases playing into your Shuffles algorithm.
Maybe.
Because I bet that's one of the more recent ones. Okay, next for me, also from a Disney movie. So so far, this just feels like Disney movies.
Yeah,
is reasonable.
You're not
enough.
All over the place.
I have Lost in the Woods, the Weezer edition from Frozen 2.
Oh, very
which,
good.
Which incidentally sounds exactly like the movie version of it.
It sounds very similar.
There, yeah, it's didn't normally it there's much. Such like a strange rendition, and this is like exactly the same. So
yeah. All right, what do we have next here? I've got La Vie Boheme from Rent.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I would have no idea about that one.
It's like 8 minutes long.
Nice.
Very long. Yeah.
Okay, up next for me, is this number three? Number four?
I think this is four for you.
Okay. Is Sorry For Now by Linkin Park.
Ah, yeah, okay. Now we're getting a little
more
all over the place.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, gosh. Let's see. Now I've got...
Don't worry, my fifth one's really good.
Is it? This one's I Just Had Sex by The Lonely Island.
Oh, my God. That is so funny. Featuring Akon.
Featuring Akon. Explicit edition.
Oh, my, it is explicit. Yeah. It is explicit. Okay. My last one is going to be Love Me Like You Mean It by Kelsey Ballerini.
Ah, excellent.
Excellent.
There you go. All right. Gosh.
That hails back to...
I'm like sweating.
I am too. Like literally like heat coming off of me right now.
Oh my gosh. Let's see. And then I've got Boom Clap by Charlie XCX.
Oh, that's a good song.
The Fault in Our Stars.
The Fault in Our Stars. Yeah. Okay. My next one, in case anyone was wondering, was Hear Me Now by Hollywood Undead.
I'm not familiar with that song at all.
Okay.
All right, you did six, so I'll go. Okay. I'll go one more. Okay, now I've got the Gaston song from the live action Beauty and the Beast.
Okay, so
there you go.
I would say that probably for the people at home, they're probably like, okay, yeah. People who are most famous for being effectively Disney theorists.
Mm-hmm.
We hit a lot of Disney songs. So right that, maybe that's not as surprising as you would think.
But it doesn't seem like if people are like, what kind of music are you into? Like, Disney. It maybe is its own genre of music, effectively.
I would say it is, yeah.
But it doesn't seem like an acceptable answer. Is it? Is it?
No, I think it is. I think probably the big difference between it is that it is, and this isn't necessarily a problem when it comes to a genre, but it's not like you don't have a favorite artist, because almost by definition, all of the Disney songs are sung by tons and tons and tons of different people.
Right.
Even within like Moana, there are like renditions of it who are done by like proper, like, not that.
Yeah.
Molly Cravallo isn't.
Ali'i Cravallo.
Ali'i Cravallo. Yeah. I can't ever get it right. whatever. Not that she doesn't have pipes, but there's also like a pop artist who sings a couple of her songs.
Exactly. Well, this has been a really fun walk down music.
So this will be the new challenge that I can extend, because we once before asked people to send in their Audible listening time. So is your music selection more random than ours? Shuffle your top five songs and send them to us at popcornculturepod@gmail.com. I'm excited to see how strange you guys are.
I'm excited.
Completely normal. Because I don't even know what would be normal. Like, if it like would it just be like five songs that are all like that could be on a playlist together anyway.
Probably. I don't know.
This is probably the other thing too, is people use playlists. I don't use playlists. Okay. I use shuffle.
Right.
Literally all the time. So like my full expectation is for my music to be immensely erratic.
I think what we've learned is that we are bad at music.
Yeah.
I agree though. I would get my iPhone now. I don't know. I feel like I used to have a lot more music. At some point, I feel like iTunes went through and like effectively managed to delete everything that wasn't legitimately purchased.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
At some point. So I used to have a much larger library of music that would have been downloaded in completely legal ways.
wink, wink,
wink. But I would like go on drives and I would never be like in the mood for something. So I would just hit shuffle until I was like, oh, okay, this song.
Yeah, this is the one I want. Yep.
Yeah.
That's pretty much exactly what I do. So very frequently I'm just changing the song and hopping around and stuff. But it's just a hooting and hollering good time.
It is.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of The Pop. Before we sign off, I want to give a huge thank you to the following patrons who support us over on Patreon, including Jordan B. Shout out. She works with us. Myron Jabito, Mathilda, hopefully?
Yeah.
Let's see here. Erica, Alexis McCarty, Olivia Zalone, Sebastian Lescala. Man, you guys have some fantastic names. Really tripping me up here. Kelly, Hannah, Holly Barnett, Pheasant Elizabeth, and Julie Gambill.
Wow. Thank you all so much for your support.
I feel like I did just... I need to format these in a different way.
I don't think you confidently said one person's name.
Okay, hold on. DeSoto.
Nailed it.
Was that pretty good?
I think so.
Okay.
I am also just going to give a shout out in the form of a correction that was requested by my wife before we sign off here. Last episode, we talked about valedictorians in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was unsure as to whether or not my wife was a valedictorian.
And yet I was not unsure.
Yes, I know. And this is just, I think, hilarious proof as to, it's very telling as to why I was not ever going to be a valedictorian. Because even at graduation, I was just not paying attention. But my wife, Beth, was indeed a valedictorian. Of our graduating class. So let me just put that correction out there on the record.
Absolutely beautiful. Yeah. Guys, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Pop. Again, if you would like to support us over on Patreon, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture. We have 3 tiers. They are all the same value. The biggest thing you get in exchange for it is access to After the Final Pop, which is an additional 10 minutes of Jay and I discussing a topic suggested by you guys. We've been doing camping stories lately. So if you would like to check that out, again, it's patreon.com/popcornculture. Otherwise, until next time,
pop pop!
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.